Southwest Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. Swiss and Austrian authorities said Thursday they are investigating whether sophisticated cyber attacks have been launched to spy inside the negotiations six world powers are conducting with Iran over its nuclear program. Swiss authorities said criminal proceedings have been opened against unnamed people on suspicion of political espionage, but gave no further details. The world powers are attempting to restrain Iran's nuclear development program. Tehran wants crippling economic sanctions imposed by the West and the UN lifted in exchange for agreeing to nuclear restrictions. Leaders of Nigeria and four of its neighbors met Thursday to discuss a proposed joint force to fight Islamic extremist group Boko Haram. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari said his country should command the task force because it would provide the bulk of the troops, and the main theater of the war is on Nigerian soil. Leaders attending the meeting in the Nigerian capital, Abuja, included the presidents of Chad, Niger, and Benin, and the defense minister of Cameroon. Two Pakistani-American brothers were sentenced to long prison terms on Thursday for a bomb plot to attack New York City in 2012. 22-year-old Rais Ghassi and 32-year-old Shahryar Ghassi were sentenced 35 years, 20 years respectively, by a court and the U.S. state of Florida. An American teenager from the state of Virginia admitted in court that he tried to help Islamic State militants recruit supporters and raise funds. 17-year-old Ali Shukri, Amin, pleaded guilty Thursday to charges of conspiring to provide material support to foreign terrorists. This is VOA News. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is calling for a swift agreement among political parties in his country to form a coalition government. It comes in the wake of the worst ever electoral setback for Turkey's former ruling party, the AKP. Dorian Jones has our report.
In his first televised speech since Sunday's election, President Erdogan urged all four parties represented in parliament not to leave the country in limbo and work quickly to form a new government. The election deprived the AKP of its parliamentary majority, thereby derailing Mr. Erdogan's plan to change the constitution in order to extend his grip on power. Meanwhile, AKP leader Ahmet Davutoğlu announced the party is dropping its bid to create an executive presidency, saying the electorate had given its verdict. Mr. Davutoğlu resigned as the country's prime minister Tuesday in a procedural move that will leave him in the post until a new government is formed. Dorian Jones, Istanbul.
An Egyptian court convicted a police officer of killing a female protester in Cairo earlier this year. Officer was sentenced to 15 years in prison. Demonstrator was shot in January as she walked toward Cairo's Tahrir Square to honor protesters killed in the uprising that ousted Hosni Mubarak in 2011. International Monetary Fund reporting no progress between Greece and its European creditors on a deal needed to unlock another $8.2 billion in bailout funding ahead of a June 30th deadline. European Union President Donald Tusk says a meeting scheduled for next week in Luxembourg will be crucial.
We need decisions, not negotiations now. It's my opinion that the Greek government has to be, I think, a little bit more realistic.
Without a deal, Greece could be forced out of the eurozone, abandoning its use of the common euro currency. United States became the world's largest oil producer in 2014, according to a report by BP Energy Company. BP economist Spencer Dale credits the shale revolution for a surge in American oil production that helped U.S. producers leapfrog, as he put it, over Saudi Arabia. American output of natural gas and oil combined is now greater than that of Russia, the previous global leader. Production surge comes as energy demand grew less than 1%, the weakest rate since 2009. A three-person crew from the International Space Station has returned to Earth following a nearly 200-day stint in space. Trio arrived at the International Space Station in 2014 and spent more than 6 months conducting research and technology demonstrations. Get more at voanews.com.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, June 12, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Burundi's opposition leader says he's boycotting upcoming elections.
All Burundians are not ready to participate in a fake election like the one which is the preoccupation of President Nkurunziza and his so-called semi.
Agathon Rwasa is the leader of Burundi's main opposition, National Liberation Forces. Meanwhile, Burundi's economy suffers after weeks of political unrest. Nigeria's new president wants his military in charge of the fight against Boko Haram. Zimbabwe's ruling party wins all 16 seats in the country's parliamentary by-elections. And the UN mission in Liberia responds to allegations of sexual exploitation by its peacekeepers.
The important thing to note here is that we take these allegations very seriously and we adhere to the Secretary General's zero tolerance policy on sexual exploitation and abuse by peacekeepers.
Matthew Alavetu Dukad is acting Chief Public Information Officer of OMIL. And today is World Day Against Child Labor as we focus on Ethiopia. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's Sports and our Listener of the Day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The leader of Burundi's main opposition National Liberation Forces party says he will not participate in what he calls fake elections that are unlikely to be free, fair, and credible. Agathon Rwasa also says President Pierre Nkurunziza should step down to allow another person to lead the ruling CNDD-FDD party in the elections in an effort to help restore peace and stability in the country. Rwasa's comments came after other opposition parties announced they will boycott both presidential and legislative elections. He tells reporter Peter Clotty that the country's current political crisis is not favorable to peaceful elections.
Indeed, all Burundians are not ready to participate in a fake election like the one which is the preoccupation of President Nkurunziza and his so-called semi. What we want is a process which can be free and fair. In nowadays conditions, there is no room for a democratic election. All what we can say is that there is a need to urgently deal with these challenges as stated by the head of state of this region, where we are all invited to a dialogue so as to build up conducive environment which may lead to a free and fair election.
Mr. Rwasa, has the opposition groups, including yours that came together, communicated this stance to the CNE or the Electoral Commission about your decision not to participate in what you called fake elections?
First of all, you must realize, as me and everybody else, that there is no Electoral Commission now. Because according to the Constitution of Burundi, the Electoral Commission is an independent board composed of five commissioners who are from different ethnic groups and who belong to different gender. Now, we have two commissioners who have fled the country because they judged that there were no room for a free and fair election. So it is a team which is unbalanced and which doesn't fit the conditions of such a commission according to the Constitution. We may say that if we want to go to a free and fair election, this Electoral Commission is to be set up anew. It is another challenge which come in addition to the challenges which were there already when the summit of Dar es Salaam took place.
As a leading opposition member in the country and as a prominent leader in Burundi, what should the people of Burundi do at this moment, looking at the crisis that exists at this current moment? Because nobody knows what is going to happen tomorrow.
Chaos is already there, but we can rectify. All what is needed is first for CNDD and Pierre Nkurunziza to give up this sectarian ambition of theirs to say that Nkurunziza must run for a third term. There is no way to confuse between a term and the way one is elected in.
Agathon Rwasa is the leader of Burundi's main opposition National Liberation Forces. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotte from the capital Bujumbura. The political crisis in Burundi is affecting an already struggling economy. International aid groups are threatening to pull out. Unemployment is on the rise and prices of basic goods are increasing. Emily Yop reports from Bujumbura.
At the warehouse of a rice supplier in Bujumbura, all activities abruptly stopped a few weeks ago. Policemen came and accused the manager of selling rice to protesters. The authorities immediately shut down the place, says a worker who wished to remain anonymous to protect his privacy. He says he's in charge of loading the rice for clients and that he could usually make about $2 to $5 per day. But these days, he says, it is very tough and he will probably go back home empty-handed. He says this closure affects everybody, workers and traders alike. Everybody's life are jeopardized because of it, he says. Over the past few weeks, Burundi has been facing the most serious political crisis since the end of the civil war a decade ago. Violent protests have been happening almost daily in the capital city of Bujumbura after President Pierre Nkurunziza announced his intention to seek a third term in office, a decision that critics claim violates the constitution. These weeks of unrest have had a deep impact on the fragile economy of one of the poorest countries in the world. Some shops and companies had to suspend their activities because of the insecurity. Road barricades have prevented the transportation of staple foods such as rice, says Estelle, a vendor on one of Bujumbura's markets. She says the price of Tanzanian rice has increased and that it becomes harder to get because suppliers are scared to transport it because of the barricades and the insecurity. More than half the Burundian population suffers from malnutrition. The latest rise in food prices has added another pressure on them, says Michael, who struggles to afford a basket of food at the market. He says the price of everything has gone up. He used to buy a kilogram of meat for about $2, but now it costs about $3. He says it is the same for rice and tomatoes. All the prices have gone up, he says, and it is very hard to afford these products now. Some political analyst says the end of violence may not equal the end of the economical crisis, especially if Mr. Nkurunziza is re-elected. Half of the country's budget comes from foreign aid, and one of its main financial backers, Belgium, has already threatened to pull out if Mr. Nkurunziza remains in power. Emily Yab for VOA News in Bujumbura.
A spokesman for the United Nations Peacekeeping Force in Liberia, known as UNMIL, says the mission adheres to the Secretary General's zero-tolerance policy on sexual exploitation and abuse by peacekeepers. Acting Chief Public Information Officer Matthew Elevena-Toduka says the mission has taken steps to minimize any possible misconduct by UN peacekeepers in Liberia. This came as the UN Office of Internal Oversight Services says on UN peacekeepers buy sex with money, jewelry, cell phones, televisions, and other items in countries where they are deployed. A report to be published this coming Monday says a survey of 489 women between the ages of 18 and 30 in the Liberian capital, Monrovia, found a quarter of them said they had sex with UN peacekeepers, usually for money. Acting Chief Public Information Officer Evelyn Tuduka says the mission has put in place an extensive awareness program for its peacekeepers.
We are aware of the allegations in some sections of the media which quote peacekeeping missions in a number of countries, including Liberia, about alleged sexual exploitation by peacekeepers. But the important thing to note here is that we take these allegations very seriously and we adhere to the Secretary General's zero tolerance policy on sexual exploitation and abuse by peacekeepers. And we thoroughly investigate any such allegation and take appropriate measures. But our information so far is that such allegations have gone down over the years because of the measures we have taken. The most important thing to note here is that we have a zero tolerance policy towards such misconduct.
You mentioned that the most unfortunate thing is that the measures you have taken have been underreported. What are some of those measures that the UN in Liberia has taken?
We have extensive outreach awareness campaigns among the peacekeepers, especially when they come to the mission area. We have an extensive awareness campaign and induction for the peacekeepers, which lays emphasis on this kind of misconduct.
The report I'm reading alleges that the United Nations is downplaying the scale of the problem by underreporting cases of sexual abuse and exploitation by its peacekeeping personnel.
Our experience is that over the years we have had a diminishing number of allegations of this nature, and we believe that that is because our awareness raising initiatives among the peacekeepers has paid dividends, and we are not disputing that there could have been some incidents of misconduct, and we are in touch with the Office of Internal Oversight Services, whose report the media agencies are basing to write these stories about.
Have you received any complaint from, say, any of the women who might have allegedly been involved with any of your peacekeepers? Have you received any complaint against your peacekeepers?
No, we haven't.
But you have taken measures against the peacekeepers, or you have taken measures in general?
We do take measures when there are allegations, and we haven't had any reports of such misconduct during this particular year. We have had some reports of allegations over the years, and we have taken appropriate measures. We have referred the cases to particular troop-contributing countries to which these peacekeepers who are alleged to have committed such misconduct further action.
Matthew Elavere-Tuduka is the Acting Chief Public Information Officer for the UN Peacekeeping Mission in Liberia. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia, at a meeting of heads of state designed to address the struggle against the Boko Haram insurgency. Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari said his country must lead to fight against the group. Chris Stein reports from VOA's Regional Bureau in Dakar.
Boko Haram has been attacking towns, villages, and cities in Nigeria's northeast for 6 years, and analysts have long said Nigeria's neighbors will need to help if the insurgency is to be put down for good. The summit on Thursday in Nigeria's capital Abuja, with neighboring heads of state along with defense and military officials, was seen as a way for Nigeria and its neighbors to decide how best to deploy a task force of troops against the group. Previous efforts at regional cooperation have been hit and miss. Under President Buhari's predecessor, Goodluck Jonathan, Chadian and Nigerian troops did enter Nigeria to fight Boko Haram earlier this year. But Chad's president later complained that poor coordination with Nigeria was hampering his soldiers' ability to strike the militants. With a new government in power, Thomas Hansen, a senior analyst with Control Risks Consultancy, says President Buhari wants to turn over a new leaf with his neighbors.
The key thing is that they're meeting, and also that there's been a change in government in Nigeria, and perhaps that some of the regional governments also now feeling a bit more comfortable in getting closer to Nigeria at the military level in terms of actually facilitating cooperation.
At the summit, President Buhari made it clear that he wants a Nigerian commander in charge of the task force rather than a rotating command. Hansen says Nigeria has long been protective of its standing in the region, despite Boko Haram at one point occupying parts of northeastern Nigeria, estimated to be equivalent to the size of Belgium.
Being the dominant regional power, it has perhaps also been a bit of a potential embarrassment to Nigerian military in particular, that troops from foreign nations have been present on Nigerian soil because of the security crisis.
The heads of state of Chad, Niger, and Benin attended the summit. Cameroon's defense minister also attended. Chris Stein for VOA News, Dakar.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Friday, June 12th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party has won all 16 seats in this week's parliamentary by-elections. However, some opposition parties and election observers say the polls were marred by some irregularities, including lack of transparency and voter intimidation. Thomas Chiripasi of VOA Zimbabwe Service reports from Harare.
Results announced today by the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission indicate that President Robert Mugabe's ZANU-PF party won all the seats in rural areas and cities, which have since 1999 been under the control of former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai's Movement for Democratic Change. Tsvangirai's party and other MDC formations, citing lack of electoral reforms, boycotted the parliamentary by-elections meant to fill seats left vacant following the recalling of some MDC renewal team lawmakers. ZANU-PF was pitted against small parties that got few votes in each constituency, leaving some of the independent candidates like Albert Mukaratirwa, who was contesting the headland seat, also crying foul.
We don't accept that one is a fair result in headland constituents, because people were not allowed to freely cast their vote in the constituents. In effect, that people were intimidated.
Some Harare residents like Patrick Mamut of Kambuzuma said ZANU-PF's victory in yesterday's by-elections does not change anything in their livelihoods, because the ruling party already has a majority in parliament.
It is just a matter of increasing numbers in parliament and a matter of also trying to use resources in parliament, because they buy each other cars, they stay in hotels and so forth. That is why you find there's a battle for positions in parliament, especially in ZANU-PF.
These sentiments were echoed by Max Otaderera of Kwadzana High Density Suburb.
There's nothing that is going to change. There's really nothing that will change, because they already had two-thirds majority of parliamentary representation. They could change the constitution in areas that requires parliamentary majority to change. There is nothing that they are going to do as regards the economy.
The MDCT praised the electorate for heeding its call to boycott the polls following yesterday's low voter turnout in most constituencies. ZANU-PF's victory means that the MDCT has surrendered its political space, at least for now, to the ruling party in constituencies that it has been controlling for more than 15 years. Reporting from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Today, June 12, is World Day Against Child Labor, as many children in developing countries below the age of 18 have to work to help their families or just to take care of themselves. One example is Ethiopia, where, as Martha van der Wolf reports from Addis Ababa, more than 60% of the country's children are engaged in different forms of child labor.
Child labor is still common in many parts of the world. In Ethiopia, many children are helping their parents on the land or roaming the streets trying to sell goods or shining shoes. These boys here are all between 12 and 16. Alula Pankhurst has done years of research on child labor. He says it's culturally accepted for Ethiopian children to support their families, and that this differs from kids who have had to do worse forms of labor.
Our children get pushed into working due to the poverty in the household, but also when the household faces a shock with the death of a family member, particularly the breadwinner.
This center at the outskirts of Addis Ababa is set up by the local organization Forum on Sustainable Child Empowerment. They take in underage girls who have had to prostitute themselves for a living. They are less visible than the shoe shiners and more vulnerable than those children who are working to support their families. 70-year-old Belainesh came from a rural village and became a domestic worker in the capital city. But she decided to leave her job as a maid because her employer treated her badly.
As a housemaid, I didn't like my job. Back then, I had friends who were in the business of prostitution, and they told me of the high income. So I quit my job and joined them.
The Forum on Sustainable Child Empowerment makes sure the girls are taken care of and receive an education. They are also taught skills. 80-year-old Indelalen just received her certificate and now works in a barbershop. Despite earning only a third of what she earned on the street, she says she will never go back.
There may be a lot of money involved in what we did, but it was not healthy. Now we earn a little money, but life is good now. I do not want to return to what I did in the past.
Several Ethiopian organizations, though, say their working on rights issues is limited due to the country's 2009 Civil Societies Law, which makes it more difficult to improve conditions for those children caught up in child labor. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Marco Uma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with athletics. Ivory Coast's Muriela Hore clocked 11.03 seconds to carry the day in the women's 100 meters at the IWF Diamond League in Oslo, Norway on Thursday. Other Africans who won their events were Ethiopia's Genzebe Dibaba in women's 5,000 meters, along with Kenyan's Asbel Kiprop and Jaira's Kipchoge Birech in men's 1 mile and 3,000 meters steeplechase, respectively. South Africa's Anaso Jobodwana and Sunet Fulyun were runners-up in men's 200 meters and women's javelin, respectively, while Eritrean Awet Bibrab was second in men's 1500 meters. In rugby news, Zimbabwe host Kenya in an Africa Rugby Division 1A tie in Harare tomorrow Saturday. Earlier on, Namibia beat hosts Tunisia 22-14 in Nabuel in the other Division 1A tie. Turning to football, Nigeria lost 1-0 to Germany at men's FIFA Under-20 World Cup in Christchurch, New Zealand on Thursday. Consequently, Mali and tournament debutants Senegal had the only Africans through to Sunday's quarterfinals. Mali engaged Germany in Christchurch as Senegal faced Uzbekistan in Wellington. In Canada, African champions Nigeria Super Falcons play Australia in Winnipeg as Cameroon challenge defending champions Japan in Vancouver at the FIFA Women's World Cup today, Friday. Meanwhile, Guinea host Swaziland in Casablanca, Morocco at the start of the 2017 Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers today, Friday. Tunisia play Djibouti as Morocco encounter Libya. Tomorrow Saturday, Cape Verde Islands engage Sao Tome and Principe. Uganda face Botswana. Nigeria play Chad. Zambia tackle Guinea-Bissau. Senegal play Burundi. Malawi host Zimbabwe. Algeria play Seychelles. Mali engage South Sudan. Angola face Central African Republic. As Burkina Faso engage Comoro Islands and South Africa play Gambia. Staying with the Nations Cup, Gabon welcome African champions Ivory Coast to Libreville as Ghana host Mauritius in Accra on Sunday. Egypt play Tanzania, Niger face Namibia, Equatorial Guinea engage Benin, Mozambique play Rwanda, Sudan meet Sierra Leone, Cameroon tackle Mauritania, Republic of Congo welcome Kenya, Togo engage Liberia, Ethiopia meet Lesotho, and the Democratic Republic of Congo encounter Madagascar. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a very good weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Leaders of Nigeria and four of its neighbors met Thursday to discuss a proposed joint force to fight against extremist group Boko Haram. In opening remarks, Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari said his country should command the task force because it will provide the bulk of the troops, and the main theater of the war is on Nigerian soil. He said a proposal to rotate the commander post between the countries every 6 months would make the task force less effective and efficient. That is it for this Friday, June 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford and reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, I'm James Botti, Washington, saying have a lovely weekend, Africa.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. You can listen to Encounter on Saturdays and Sundays. On Saturdays, tune in at 3:30 and 14:30 UTC. And on Sundays at 5:30 and 17:30 UTC. Or subscribe to the Encounter podcast. Just go to our homepage at voanews.com and click on podcasts. Also, we love to hear from you. Send an email to encounter at voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA. That's Encounter on VOA Africa.